Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
To the Explaining History podcast, and today I'm going to talk about the rise and fall of the Bretton Woods system from 1944 to 1971. Now, I've kind of touched upon this recently when I've been talking about inflation and economic stagnation in the 70s, and the end of the fixed exchange system, the gold standard, where Nixon took America off the gold standard in 1971. And replaced it, replaced the dollar as a floating currency, and this really is the end of Bretton Woods. And Bretton Woods has such an important role in the economic history of the 20th century, the economic revival of Germany and Japan, and the stabilisation of Europe. It has an important role in the creation of the kind of the mid-century boom that we see from the in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and also in the consolidation of this idea of the West during the Cold War. So it's a fascinating set of kind of economic principles hammered out by former New Dealers. Such as Harry Dexter White and John Maynard Keynes from Great Britain. It has its model in the US New Deal, but by the time the negotiations in 1944 were finished, some of John Maynard Keynes' more optimistic, almost utopian goals about stabilising the world economic system, ironing out trade imbalances and preventing there being vast disparities between rich and poor, crashed into the harsh realities of American power. America had a world economic surplus and wasn't willing to squander it lightly or give it away, as no nation state would. So let's go back to the beginning, and we'll go gradually through what Bretton Woods was and how it operated. Okay, so my book suggestion for the week is Yanis Varoufakis's And the Weak Suffer What They Must, very interesting history of the current euro crisis and its origins, really dating all the way back to Bretton Woods. John Maynard Keynes was one of the first economists to make a very clear and convincing case between the two world wars and economic crisis, and the idea that imbalances between nations, trade imbalances, one nation being in surplus, the other nation being in deficit, could create huge instabilities within the world economy. Keynes theorised that there was essentially a surplus recycling going on, that one country that is in surplus, i.e. it sells more goods and services to another country than the other country sells to it, therefore there is a net outflow of cash from one country to another, One country essentially is very economically powerful and becomes a magnet for other people's money. When it builds up all this cash, it needs to do something with it. So it lends it to other countries, thus creating debt. The other countries become indebted and suck, and the wealthy country sucks up more money, but it recycles it. One of the reasons it recycles the money is that if the other countries lose their spending power, then they don't buy the rich country's products. This is all fine and well, said Keynes. However, all you need is a financial crisis in any one of those countries, and the system becomes very fragile. Lenders stop lending, the whole merry-go-round of goods and services and money stops, and the system crashes, as happens in 1929. Very quickly, you go from internationalism, globalism, trade, to protectionism, tariffs, beggar thy neighbour, economic policies, and you have multiple slumps, multiple economic crises, from which it's very difficult to revive economies. And these are perfect breeding grounds for people like Hitler, for example. And you only need to look at the voting patterns in Germany after 1929 to see that prior to economic crisis, when there's a nice and healthy period of surplus recycling between America and Germany, and Germany is enjoying an artificial boom, Hitler's not necessary. He is an irrelevance and no one's listening to him, and as a result, and similarly, the communists are polling very badly as well. After 1929, within 2.5 years, by mid-1932, the Nazis are the largest party in Germany. And Keynes, in his book The Economic Consequences of the Peace, had quite presciently criticised the Treaty of Versailles, saying it did nothing to revive the shattered economies of Europe. It did nothing to bring Russia in from the cold. It did nothing, essentially, to create globalism. And he was justified, really, based on the subsequent results. So Keynes had looked at the Second World War and seen that a more exaggerated set of surpluses and deficits had built up. By the end of the Second World War, every country in Europe is bankrupt, and Great Britain is bankrupt also, though her infrastructure isn't half as shattered as everybody else's. And America has a fifth of the world's population and half the world's wealth by 1945. And it was the intention of American policymakers really to keep things that way. But the price of that would have been an extremely unstable world where, and eventually the Marshall Aid steps in to kind of put the kibosh on this one. We'd have an extremely unstable world which would be susceptible to resurgent fascism and communism, particularly in Europe and Asia. The last thing that America wants to see. So Bretton Woods was initially, in Keynes's eyes, a vehicle for creating a more balanced trade world where surplus recycling would have been done in a different way. Bear in mind that when Bretton Woods is being discussed, this is the summer of 1944, so it's shortly after D-Day. The outcome of the war in Europe is clear the way it will eventually go. The timescale is still perhaps slightly unclear, but the Germans have lost the war is just a matter of time. So within that context, it gave the US and British governments scope to plan for the post-war economic order. And while there were over 40 Allied delegates at the meeting, the American delegation saw that it had an unrivaled opportunity in just a few short weeks, really, to shape the post-war global economy. And this is something that is very rare that a nation state ever gets the power to do, and ever gets the power to kind of formally ratify in such a complete and clear manner. Roosevelt, now not really in the best of health, announced that this would be an end to American isolationism and that kind of recurrent isolationist trend within American culture would finally be consigned to history. Roosevelt said that now America would become intimately connected with the tools to manage the world economy. And the most important continent for the Americans was Europe. Europe had caused two world wars and unimaginable suffering. Where Europe's problems become the world's problems. And it's always interesting that there is this adage when America has a sneeze, Europe catches a cold. But in a way, that's not necessarily true. Not up till 1945, anyway, when Europe has had a crisis, America has been drawn in on two occasions, and that crisis has been exported around the world with immense bloodshed. So it was important to stabilise Europe, and the way to do it, in the eyes of Harry Dexter White and Roosevelt, was to remonetize Europe. Europe's currencies were worthless due to wartime inflation, much of it caused by the Germans, who, when they would occupy a country, would simply turn on the printing presses in order to pay for things, in order to pay for their occupation, in order to get the occupied country to pay for its own occupation. And this had bankrupted all of Europe. No doubt part of the post-war occupation plan would have been to financially exploit these already inflation-bankrupted countries. So what you needed to do was to give a firm guarantee that each currency actually had some intrinsic worth. And the way you did that was to take a Deutschmark or a franc or even the pound, and to give it a parity, not necessarily a parity, but give it a fixed exchange value to the dollar, i.e. there are two francs to the dollar, or what have you. And each dollar would therefore be backed by a certain amount of gold, and gold would retain a fixed price. At this price, it was $35 an ounce, which was considered a reasonable price in 1944, but became excessively an unfair price to pay, a too cheap a price to pay, as the decades wore on, which would cause fundamental problems. Once the gold standard was instituted, people could have some kind of faith in the currencies that were being bought and sold, not just on a grassroots, everyday consumer level, but in the international money markets. And that meant that there would be people willing to invest in Europe in the not-too-distant future. America was, in essence, sharing the dollar with the rest of the world. And the dollar and the stability and the strength.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I think that the American economy, which had boomed during the war, was really kind of America's wartime superpower. The Soviets had vast amounts of manpower, and America had technological superiority, the atomic bomb, and the strength of the dollar. And it would perhaps be the strength of the dollar that would be the most decisive factor. Keynes argued that a global currency, which local currencies could be exchanged against, would be the way in which trade could be stabilised and imbalances could be avoided. He also argued that an international monetary fund should be essentially a clearinghouse for trade imbalances, that there were instruments to gradually discourage excessive build-ups of surpluses, and methods to encourage the recycling of those surpluses in a sustainable way. And so it meant that there would be fewer vast imbalances between rich and poor countries, and that the poor world would be, in Keynes's view, fast-tracked in terms of development. The problem for the Americans was that that firstly, Harry Dexter White had been sent by Roosevelt to the Bretton Woods Agreement, not to come up with some utopian world view, but to come up with a stable system of world finance that worked only as long as America remained in surplus. And therefore were the seeds of its downfall. If this system of surplus recycling created nations which suddenly became wealthy, such as, say, Germany and Japan during the post-war boom, and nations which could then build up their own surpluses, recycle their own surplus cash to America in terms of exports and debt, then the system would no longer work for the United States, and therefore the dollar, which underpinned all of it, would come under intense pressure, and thus it would pull the rug out from underneath everyone's feet. So it was almost putting a future gun to the heads of European capitals, saying it's just not in your interests to outcompete us to the extent that you undermine the entire system. Obviously, it's very difficult to predict, or almost impossible to predict, what people will do in the future, or how countries will operate in the future. And therefore, there was a flaw here, and that the seeds of Bretton Woods' downfall were there within the entire system. Because obviously what happens is Germany and Japan, the two countries that are militarily occupied by America, and the two countries where their currencies become support pillars for the dollar, protecting the rest of the world from the wilder fluctuations that might happen during economic crises. These countries become who are constitutionally, politically, and economically restructured on American but also along social democratic lines, become economic powerhouses within a decade of the end of the Second World War, and they within 2 or 3 decades are filling American homes with Japanese-made electronics and German cars. And there is an acute sense of anxiety by the late 1960s, early 1970s, that America has lost its comparative advantages that had been gifted to it by the sacrifice of American soldiers during the Second World War. That Americans weren't buying American anymore, they were buying European. And this also coincides with the extremely expensive Vietnam War, Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, the development of essentially almost an American welfare state at the same time as pursuing an extremely costly debt-financed American war. And the pressure on the US currency becomes insurmountable, especially as the amount of gold that underpins the US dollar, and therefore underpins the French franc, is hugely because it's hugely undervalued, and US essentially winds up via the dollar and the franc selling gold to France for an absolute bargain. There's a considerable amount of resentment towards this in Washington when Richard Nixon comes to power. Nixon essentially says, look, this has to end. And Johnson before it said, I'm pretty fed up with having to underwrite France's economy at the expense of my ambitions in America, the Great Society, and winning the Vietnam War by selling them gold at a pittance. So in 1971, when the decision is taken to remove America from the gold standard, the Europeans are told, with virtually no notice, that their currencies now have to be based on the intrinsic value of their own economies. It's time for you guys to stand on your own 2 feet. And this causes an immense crisis because the everything from the pound to the Deutschmark has had a toe for the last few decades. The economies of Europe, they've given a huge shot in the arm by the support of the dollar, the globalisation of the dollar. But they don't have and haven't had to compete in quite the same way. It's not to say that the European economies are completely uncompetitive, but they haven't had their feet to the fire in quite the same way as they do now. And it's clear that there's a relationship between economic slump in the 1970s, up to 1973, and then the oil crisis really takes it in a whole new direction. But economic instability up to 1973, from 71 to 73, and the withdrawal of the gold standard, the disruption to the gold standard. Also, the history of European integration makes more sense in this light. When one currency won't underwrite your national currencies, why not propose the development of another one, such as eventually, way down the line in 2000, the euro? Ted Heath's enthusiasm for Europe after winning power from Harold Wilson in 1970 makes a lot more sense in this context. The free ride that America has given Europe is over, and the and closer ties between the US economy and Great Britain are perhaps a less safer bet than those between Britain and Europe. There had already been several attempts, obviously, to join the EEC at that point, and Ted Heath's 1972 application to join is eventually accepted in the start of 1973. The good things that came from the Bretton Woods system was an unprecedented period of world economic growth, and based on really the strength of the dollar, But it could only really work when America was the powerhouse of the world economy, and America was relatively in surplus. America is not a country that has been in surplus for some time. America has considerable trade deficits. The poll of economic surplus from the 1980s onwards had shifted towards China. The fundamental flaw of Bretton Woods always was that it rested on America's ability to retain its surplus. And it's unfortunately rather utopian to assume that any country can do this indefinitely. And the mechanisms for righting surpluses and righting imbalances are not with us. What are the IMF finally became, the International Monetary Fund, one of the Bretton Woods institutions, finally became, wasn't so much a clearinghouse for global debt, but it became a device for instituting structural adjustment. So it became a lender, and the loans come with conditions. a great many third world countries found this out to their detriment, but also first world countries. I mean, Great Britain in 1976 takes out IMF loans due to its kind of ailing economic circumstances, and these come with not dissimilar conditions: privatisation of public services, an end to a commitment to full employment, monetarist policies that were first theorised by people like Friedrich Hayek and then later Milton Friedman, that created the kind of the economic and political landscape of the 1980s that suited, you know, politicians like Margaret Thatcher. It's always important to note that Thatcherism didn't begin with Margaret Thatcher. Thatcherite policies that in embryo form begin in 1976 during the last 2 years of the 2.5 years of the Callaghan government, with the IMF loan, money lent to Britain that comes with serious conditions attached and structural adjustment programmes. Anyway, I'm going to end it there. Just to let you know, in terms of structural adjustments, the Explaining History podcast has had to bite the commercial bullet. We're moving over to a new pod hoster, and we're having to embrace advertising. But that means that there are a number of good things to come from this. Firstly, I have unlimited. I can produce far more podcasts. Secondly, I don't have to ask anyone for any financial support ever again. For those who have supported me in the past, I am eternally grateful. And it also means I might be able to invest in a little bit more sophisticated recording equipment later on, so these podcasts won't sound so grainy. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I shall catch you on the next podcast. All the best. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.